It's Tuesday, 9th of February, and it's time to get your grid on with the Greencast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Rhodes.
Hello.
Dominoid.
Hello.
And Nikki.
Hello.
Got a lot of gaming news to talk about, lots of varied different topics this week, so let's not talk about them yet. We'll talk about what we always talk about. What's everyone been playing? Rhodes, take us away.
I haven't played Little Nightmares 2, everyone. I think I can talk about this now, can't I? Yeah, I can, of course I can.
The embargo lifted, yes.
Yeah, I can. Well, you know, people are, you know how companies are. I don't want to get sued. I'm too young to get sued. But no, that's really good, you know. It's really good. It's very, very similar to the first, for those who have played the original Little Nightmares. It's dark, dingy, disgusting, but beautiful. Like, it's just done really well. It's still got that weird 2.5D world where you're like, oh, look, I can walk backwards and forwards, but I gain nothing from doing this, but cool, I suppose. And it's just, it's so good. You ever play those things where, like, a game has a great story despite no one ever saying anything throughout the entire game? It's one of those games. Ugh, Ace, why are you like this? Come on, just
like Wally is in the film world.
Yes, it's very much. Well, imagine if Wally was like depressing. Well, I guess it's kind of depressing, Wally, I suppose. But imagine if Wally was like constantly trying to be harassed by like horrible things in the environment. I guess he's also harassed by horrible things in the environment. Imagine Wally, but as a game, right? imagine if the humans hadn't fled to space and instead they were just, I don't know what they are, eating each other. I don't know. I don't really know what they do. Like, they just seem to, I don't even know if they're human, really. I don't really know. It doesn't really explain, which is, it's part of the mystique, I suppose.
You're talking more about Wall-E now.
this is the game,
or is this just a preview of 2022?
This is a preview of 2022. Basically, World War III, followed quickly by World War IV. And that's it. It's all over at that point. That's the ending of the world.
I read on Twitter somebody was saying that one sort of slightly frustrating downside is apparently, although there's no speech, there are things that need audio cues in it, and there's no subtitles or visual sound cues, so it can't be played by people who are hard of hearing or deaf. Is that accurate?
The only part of the game I know that needs or uses audio cues does have clear visual cues, because I'm completely oblivious to audio cues half the time. So I was using the visual cues to get me through. So they definitely do the job, at least for me.
I don't know.
There was a separate one. As far as I'm aware, that was the only one where I could figure that there was definitely audio cues. But I don't think it would be that much of an issue. Like, I mean, they could probably make the visual cues maybe a little bit clearer, but I thought they were pretty clear. I'm blind as anything, so. But I guess we all react differently. We all read those cues differently, so it depends on what they found in their own internal testing, I suppose. But no, it is a really good game. I gave it a 10, for those who haven't read my review, which is, you know, if you listen to this podcast every week, I don't like video games. That was pretty impressive.
You know, I'm going to have to edit that out and replace it with, you should read the review to find out what the score is.
Well, I mean, if you go to Metacritic.com, we're right at the top, because I'm actually a shill. I don't think it's a 10. I just wanted to get gangrene out there. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I was doing. Let's get us to the top of Metacritic.
Send the PayPal invoice.
Yeah. Please.
I look forward to listening back to this podcast, and that it just cuts to an advert for the game just before you say 10.
Well, I just remember being told that we needed to repair our Bandai relationship, and I was like, I'll kill for them. That's it. I'll just give them a 10. Me and Bandai. My dad works for Bandai. There we go. That's it. But yeah, it's really good. It's a refinement on the first game. So if you ever played the first one, it was good. I don't want to say amazing. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, if it was like it was a good game, a good experience. And this just improves on it all round. And the added length makes the story a bit more, gives it a bit more oomph, I think, is the the right way of saying it. Like the ending is like, oh, can't believe that. And yeah, it's just, it's really good. And I also got to play Neo 2 because I actually only play games that Ace gives me to review. I don't play anything else anymore. It's really hard. I don't like it. I'm scared. I'm scared of the hard game.
Is it the Dark Souls of Neo games?
It is the Dark Souls of Neo games. Maybe Dark Souls is the Neo now because I've beaten the Dark Souls. I haven't beaten a Neo game before. So maybe Dark Souls are the easy games. Maybe it was all a lie. It was all a mirage.
Fire emoji, fire emoji.
Fire emoji, indeed. 100 emoji.
The truth is there is no game.
The truth is there is no game. No, it's in Neo, there's this one big difference. I've only played it for a couple of hours, so I can't comment on it too much yet. But you have to, like, when you do attacks, you have to press R1 at the perfect time to refill your ki, which is like your stamina. And I, obviously, for those who'd listened to the podcast, they know I played a lot of Demon's Souls since it came out. So I'm used to playing Dark Souls and the Dark Soul way of doing things. I just completely forget that this is a thing you have to do in Neo. So I just attack, and I don't press the button to like help restore my ki. And whatever I'm fighting is just like, you have no stamina. I'm going to kill you. And then I die. And I'm like, oh yeah, I don't have any stamina. I died. And it's just like, it's so different. Like, all the little things make it so, like, when you like remember them, it's not that difficult a game. Like to read like the enemies, like what they do and like their loop, is not as difficult as when you play like a Dark Souls game, let's say. But remembering all the little things to make your own character powerful enough and like to increase your own stamina to ensure that you are avoiding attacks and hitting attacks at the right time. Those are the little things that make you make mistakes because you're like, oh, it's going to hit me, and you dodge, and then you forget to press the button to restore your key, and then it gets you again. You're like, oh, for God's sake. It's an interesting take on a system that, like, the whole, this game's really hard because the boss just squashes you, whereas it's not really hard because the boss squashes you. It's hard because your management in tense situations has to be very good, but it is very difficult to do that.
Okay. Dom, what about you?
I've been playing a fair bit for a change this week. I'll rush through a few because they're not really interesting. I've been playing FIFA because, you know, it's the only, I'm a Brighton fan. It's the only way I can see my club as actually being any good is to play them in a computer game. Then I have also been playing a little bit of Destruction All-Stars, free on PlayStation Plus now. I'm really bad at that, like really, really bad. It's kind of like an arena-only Destruction Derby. And the problem with arena-only games is by the time I get into them, because I'm always late to the party, there's loads of other people on who've practiced and are good at it, and I can't even drive in real life, so I died a lot and then stopped playing it again. Played a little bit of Concrete Genie, also free on PlayStation Plus. Really, really cute game. Has this horrible insistence on using motion controls, I found myself getting really annoyed with that, but there is an option to turn them off in the accessibility options, so that's good. But it does that thing that I hate, which I know I keep banging on about. You can't get into the accessibility options until after the initial cutscene, which means I couldn't turn on subtitles until after then. So I don't know what the hell's going on in it. But it's cute. So there's that. And also I've been playing. So there's two games I've been playing with my partner. We have been trying to finish Little Big Planet 3. So we played through all of the first two games together. We had the third one and then moved about a week after we bought it, so never got round to playing it properly. And recently we've completed Sackboy together, so we thought we'll go back to Little Big Planet 3. And that is by far and away the worst of the Little Big Planet games. The final level is just unnecessarily hard, especially for a game that's supposed to be family friendly, which is a shame. But we gave up on the final level eventually and went to have a look for another game to play. Trine 2 we found, which was given away on PlayStation Plus years ago now, and I never actually got around to installing it because it always sort of seemed a bit like a sort of, you know, you get those like really sort of pretentious indie games that everyone goes on about because they think it makes them look smart. It always struck me as one of those, so I never got around to it. But we've started playing it, and it's really, really good. And it's amazing how many puzzles you can solve by making a cube and just sort of wiggling it about a bit. So that's been my week. Mainly, I've been making cubes.
Okay. And Nikki.
Hello, your Gacha Queen is here. So that covers about half what I've been playing. more Atelier Riser 2, still working my way through that, still kind of working on the review. It's very much a slow burn game, but it's enjoyable. Still, it's been getting a couple of patches. Graphics settings are still a bit weird. The game, it looks really good, but there's something about it that just is a bit jarring, and I can't quite figure out what it is. And I keep playing all the settings. But it's making it a little bit difficult. Typically, it's motion blur. It's not motion blur, but there's something about it. It's just it's painful to look at after a while, and I can't figure out which setting it is. Typically, it is motion blur. I turn that shit off. Sometimes it's the anti-aliasing, but there's just something about this game on PC that's just a bit like, it's a bit jarring, which is a shame because I'm loving it otherwise. Also, decided to jump into some TF2 this week. We did a community night, and it was a lot of fun. Got a little bit back into Destiny 2. New season kicks off about 2 hours ago at the time of recording, so another season of not doing the season pass because I'm literally just here for the story. And for some strange reason, I decided to jump back into Kanagawa Jet Girls because anime girls on jet skis. That's pretty much
any explanation you need.
Yeah, it's you know, it's anime girls on jet skis. It's good. And then I realized, because I've been playing so much Ballistic NG, I realized how slow Kanagawa Jet Girls is compared to, say, Ballistic NG or Wipeout. So then I uninstalled it and went back to Ballistic NG. Like, I'm sorry, I love you, anime girls, but you ain't going at 400 miles an hour. You know, I want anime girls and speed.
So would your ideal game be anime girls that can somehow travel at 400 miles an hour?
Yes. Developers, make me happy.
Does the way of which they achieve that speed matter, or is it just as long as they hit that speed?
No, but I would probably appreciate it more if it's just that if they're just sprinting, because I think, like, imagine, if you will, a game basically like Wipeout, but it's just people sprinting. I think that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, but then if you change it to like Teletubbies, suddenly it becomes a horror game.
That so much. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh god. But yeah, really not much.
There actually is a game like that on the PS2. It's called Extreme Sprint 3010, and it's really bad.
It sounds awful.
It's dreadful.
I am looking at this right now. Oh wow, yeah, that does look terrible.
Interesting fact that I just found out. Terminal velocity, the speed of which you reach if you are dropped from a high height and cannot get any faster whilst travelling unpowered, is 118 miles per hour. So these anime girls travelling at 400 miles per hour, they're going to have to be strapped to some jets that they can't be skydiving because that's not fast enough.
See, now I can't help but just think back to an anime I watched the other week where I was just like casually anime girls breaking the sound barrier and they're fine, and you're just there like, no, you'd be dead. like you're literally not even wearing an oxygen mask, you'd be dead.
I'm just looking at the gameplay from Extreme Sprint 3010, and although it is in fact extreme given the circumstances of the environment, I wouldn't really call it a sprint.
It's more of a kind of slow amble.
So even like...
It's so awful.
When the character falls down, they do a kip-up, and even the kip-up is like slow motion.
Yeah, it's in my collection of really awful games, because I'm an idiot and I collect really bad games. And at some point, I'm going to have to stream it. So I'll give you a heads up when that happens.
Please.
But anyway, Nikki, sorry, I railroaded you.
No. I could go in depth about how much Genshin Impact's photography event is stupid and slightly awkward for comical reasons. But I think it's better I don't dwell on gacha. So that's pretty much me. Sorry, I haven't really played much.
Okay, then. For the final week, my games that I've been playing are sponsored by Voodoo Ranger Hazy IPA. Not a real sponsor. But yeah, I've reached my final can.
So what? We're sponsored by Bandai Namco. We're sponsored by Hazy Punk. Like, what else are we sponsored by? All of the gacha games.
Yeah, can we get sponsored by gacha games so I can have some more currency?
See what I can do.
Brought to you within proud association with trees.
Trees?
Are you struggling to breathe? Do you need more oxygen? You need trees!
Trees!
Why are the trees so scary? Spooky trees!
We are ass.
Treat our family.
And my games that I've been playing... I've finished Yakuza Kiwami and moved on to Yakuza Kiwami 2. The graphics are... I said this in the Discord channel. It's like going from PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4. It's just such a pretty upgrade. Puce asked if I enjoyed Kiwami more than Yakuza 0. And I had to think about it, and I did not. I really enjoyed Yakuza Kiwami, but I enjoyed Zero more because there was more to do, more mini games and events and stuff. Yakuza 2 has so far plenty of stuff being shoved in my face. The latest sub story that I'm struggling through is cancel this guy's debt by playing Mahjong. I have no idea what is going on. I'm trying to collect like the tiles in the numerical order or some sort of order, but even though I do, it's not a good enough order compared to the other people. And occasionally it'll come up and say you have to press X to get to Chi or Jin or whatever. And when I do that, I still don't get enough points to win. I have no idea, guys. Anyway,
I've tried throwing my young pieces at them, seeing if that helps.
I mean, most of these sub stories end in a fight. I just want this one to start in a fight, and then I don't have to play Mahjong. I've had people say it was like Rummy. I don't know how to play Rummy. Also, this isn't using playing cards, so that doesn't help me because all the symbols are different.
I used to kind of quite like Mahjong, and then I got into MAME, and if anybody's ever downloaded a full set of MAME ROMs, it's amazing just how many Japanese arcade games are just a variation of strip Mahjong. Playing on random, I just got so fed up of it.
Okay, I'm familiar with a version of Mahjong where you stack all of the tiles up into it like a pyramid, and then you have to like find two of a kind. If you find two of a kind, you can remove those and work your way down. This one, I've no idea. Everyone's got tiles, and you got your steel tiles to make your chi. And
most likely, anyway, what's happening is you are playing actual Mahjong as opposed to what everyone knows, which is the Windows Match Mahjong. Fun fact, the history of Mahjong and how it got brought to the West is fascinating. I recommend Googling it.
I like to think that Ace is legitimately trying to clear some man's debt and he doesn't realize it.
Well, every time I fail, the debt collector says, oh, you can try again and we'll just add more debt onto this guy.
Like some real Japanese guy somewhere sitting there going, please, please, Mr. Englishman, get better at this game.
It's like the idea.
40 million now.
I like the idea that you're losing at Mahjong and the debt collectors are going, we'll add more debt to him. He's not even playing the game.
Yeah, but he's said I'm his substitute. I will play for him. And I'm walking down the street like, wait, what?
You need substitute.
A shocking amount of Yakuza Kiwami 2's sub-stories start that way. Hey, you, huh? What? Do this. No, I'm busy. No, do it. Okay. Anyway, I've played a bit more of Mass Effect Andromeda. I didn't have a very long session because, well, but I finished a quest that I was doing on the planet Eos, the first planet you land on, and left the planet and was walking around the ship talking to my new crew. And by the time I'd done all of that, I had to come off the game because it was getting really late. So I've played it for a while, but I didn't actually do much. Altdeus Beyond Chronos, the VR visual novel that I've been playing. I posted a picture on Twitter because at one point this hologram makes itself about 4 or 5 stories tall. So I tweeted it with a tall lady in Altdeus Beyond Chronos is 4 stories tall because everyone was fascinated with Resident Evil 8's tall lady. And the official account for Altdeus Beyond Chronos, I didn't tag them, but they still liked the tweet. The story's certainly interesting, which is a visual novel, it has to be. And it really changes things being there rather than just seeing these images moving on your screen, because you've got the people there in front of you. I've been playing a bit of Heat Signature. I'm still making my way slowly through the first galaxy. I don't know how long I've been playing that, but I'll stick something on YouTube or Disney Plus and play that while watching something, because you can pause it to shoot a weapon at any time. And started Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Lockdown. It's about you are the counter-terrorist organization Rainbow, and these terrorists have stolen a virus that's, if the random terrorists that you come across in the missions are carrying it, can infect you and kill you with it.
That lockdown and a contagious virus, that just seems a little bit too close to real life for me.
Yeah, this game's from 2006, and the one that they announced in 2019 is Rainbow Six Quarantine. Something going on there. It's
Rainbow Six Godzilla, we're screwed.
Rainbow Six Kaiju. The graphics are much, much better. This is the first non-Rainbow Six 3 Rainbow Six game that I've played in a long time, because there's just so many. There's the PC version, the console version, the DLC for the PC version, expansions. I'm just glad to not be looking at the Rainbow Six 3 engine anymore. And finally, a game I played for a couple hours earlier today, Mega Tag Mansion Blanc plus Neptune versus Zombies. It's a hyperdimension Neptunia game where it's basically Dynasty Warriors, but kind of boring. I mean, I'm not a fan of Dynasty Warriors, but at least you don't have to sit through 5 minutes of cutscene and then a minute and a half of a fight, because you managed to choose the character that has fast attacks instead of the character that has slow attacks, and then you're back into another cutscene for 5 minutes, and then you choose the next level and it's another cutscene for 5 minutes, and then it's just, I'm hoping the levels get longer. I'm sorry?
It sounds amazing. You're really selling me on it.
I'm not trying to sell you on it.
Another sponsor for the Greencast.
unless you like anime girl upskirt shots.
No one's old.
They're all wearing school uniforms in this one, which means they're all wearing skirts. And they are not long skirts. One of the characters in Nep Gear, when just by running forwards, the back of her skirt's flapping up. At least the others, you can't see anything unless you move the camera down.
She's called Nep Gear.
Nep Gear. It's
a router.
It's Neptune's little sister, but probably named after Net Gear. Anyway, don't have a segue, so our news to get us away from upskirts of anime girls. Channel 4 in the UK is looking to reboot the classic TV show Games Master. They announced in a recent call for sponsorships that they're exploring rebooting the cultural phenomenon Games Master, which featured Sir Patrick Moore as the titular Games Master, who were random people who got into the studio audience would come to ask for tips and tricks in the latest video games.
I'm really not sure about this as to whether it's a good thing or not, because I loved that show, but I don't know if you can, like, can you recapture the magic, especially without Patrick Stewart? No, especially without Patrick Moore. Sorry.
That would entirely depend on if they go the same route, because for those who weren't alive or not in the country at the time, Games Master, whenever Games Master was on the screen, Sir Patrick Moore, there was a ton of CGI around him, and he'd usually have a monocle. And depending on the season, he'd be some sort of cyborg, or he'd be literally God, or... That show was a trip.
Brilliant.
Anyway, it's certainly interesting to reboot something from 1992. Perhaps they have the rights back, because the magazine Games Master ended in 2018, I want to say.
This was what I was wondering, because that was what happened, wasn't it? That Future Publishing bought the rights so they could carry on making the magazine. So do they revert back when they stop publishing, or have they just sold them back?
I would imagine sold them. Sorry, just having a quick look on Wikipedia, and that is quite a substantial page. magazine, yes. It started in 1993 and ended in 2018. That's correct.
I think Channel 4, they have, to be fair to them, they have shown that they can reboot their IPs well. So the new Crystal Maze, Richard Ayoade, is really good. And I think what makes it good is that they're not attempting to make it exactly the same as the previous. He sort of made it his own. So I think if they do that, they don't try and just copy exactly what they did before, it may work. But I'm just worried it's just going to be full of FIFA and Fortnite and sort of the less sort of...
How do I get a better team in How do I get a better team in FIFA Games Master? Oh, well, what you do is you go to the PlayStation Store and you buy the Ultimate Team.
This is the thing, seats aren't really a thing anymore, so they don't necessarily need to do that. And also, like, when Games Master was on, that would be a legitimate way to get cheats. But now people would just Google the puzzles they can't finish. So it's not the same, is it?
Speaking of things that aren't the same, Terraria. Okay, Terraria, everyone knows what Terraria is. It's been released on Android, iOS, Linux, Mac, new Nintendo 3DS, the Wii U, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Vita, Windows, Xbox 360, Xbox One, but it's not coming to Stadia. Stadia, Google's streaming console.
I can't believe you actually ran through every single console that's come out on. I didn't think you were going to when you started that, but you did.
If you listen really carefully, you can see the three active Stadia users, or hear the three active Stadia users screaming in the background.
Well, one of them isn't the Terraria dev who's been banned from using his Google account.
Yes, Terraria's developer, Relogic, is not going to be supporting Google or or bringing the game to Stadia, because the person in charge, the co-creator of Terraria and president of Relogic, Andrew Spinks, has tweeted a few tweets saying that he's lost access to his Google account and has no idea why. He's not breached the terms and conditions. Google are giving him the runaround. They're not giving him any information. Can't access Google Play, Google Drive, YouTube, Gmail. And, well, I am fond of this sort of thinking. If they're not going to support him, then he's not going to support them.
To be fair, though, people who say, I got banned from service X, Y, or Z, and I have no idea why, generally, they know exactly why they got banned. They just don't admit it because they did something really shitty.
But what could you do to get banned from Google?
Yeah, like as someone who works in the mobile games industry, it is very, very difficult.
I don't. The trouble is, if I sort of start making hypotheses, then technically that's slander. So probably best I don't. But I would be surprised if he had genuinely done nothing, based on the fact I've not yet seen a situation where somebody really was banned without reason from anything ever.
Well, taking him out of the equation, what could someone potentially do to upset Google so much that they'd cancel your accounts?
Well, I know there have been people banned for gaming the system with Play Store app, like sort of putting fake reviews up and so on. There've been people who've been banned for repeatedly clicking on either their own Google Ads to get impressions up, or their competitors' Google Ads in order to cost them on pay-per-clicks. So I'm not suggesting that he's done any of these things, but these are things that I've seen people have done that have got them banned from Google.
Yeah, I've seen developers be completely removed off of Steam for manipulating reviews on one title.
I think it's even harder to get kicked off Steam than it is Google, bloody hell.
The developer of Suicide Guy admitted to, it was found that he'd been manipulating reviews, and so Steam removed all of his games, and someone asked in the Steam discussions, why has this been removed? And he replied, okay, hands up, I manipulate reviews, and Steam removed that post from the Steam discussion. Good times. Sorry, I have my tabs out of order.
Professionalism here at the Greencast.
Well, that's why we just talked about Terraria instead of E3. No, it's not June yet, but E3 have announced that they are going to do a digital event for 2021, which is a pretty good idea because, you know, pandemic.
It's going to happen. But it's just kind of one of those things that, well, now it has happened, it kind of counts as news, I suppose.
Well, apparently the intention is to hold multiple two-hour keynote sessions from partners and have an awards show, preview night, some smaller streams from game publishers, etc. Apparently, it's rumoured that it's going to cost you, if you want a quote-unquote stall at E3, it's going to cost you about $1 million, which is insane.
I just don't understand what they're thinking.
Perfect opportunity to allow some smaller indie developers access to this playing field, and they've gone, do you know what? Fuck those poor people. And I hate that. It's just...
Surely this is more than it cost when you were actually physically going to LA for E3.
Yes, but the thing is, with the digital events, there's limited time available. And if you want to be in the same... well, if you want to be next to Microsoft and Ubisoft, etc., then you got to pay the same as them. But the people in charge of E3 don't always make the best decisions, because in 2019 they did dox 2,000 members of the media.
Oh yeah,
I've forgotten about that. That wasn't the most sensible thing they've ever done.
No.
It's just, so you go, Reds.
It's just a dying brand, isn't it, E3? Because I know Jeff Keighley's doing his own thing in the summer, and Sony don't do it anymore. I don't know who it's for. Like, I don't know who's going to be tuning into this. Like, they're just losing more and more, and charging more money isn't going to bring those companies back. It's just going to drive more away.
Yeah, I didn't think, I was a bit skeptical when Keighley was like, Summer of Games, and I at first thought it's a bit, I don't know, but it actually worked. It actually turned out quite nice. Like, there was kind of something every other day for a good month or two, and it was just like, oh, this is quite nice. And things were kind of made quite available on platforms that you could stream, and there was regular communication, and it worked. And I'm sure there's probably something in the background there of like, well, you know, if you pay a bit more, I'll give you like a bit more of a focus. But you know, E3 being like six-figure sum to do, you know, to just be, to have your thing maybe quickly shown next to Sony or something is a bit mad. It's like, it's a bit of a weird comparison, but imagine if Apple one day came out and said, right, we're going to start selling 5 minutes of our keynote. Whoever pays the most, you can have a bit of that time. And I can guarantee you, if Apple did something like that, people would pay a ridiculous amount of money, because whenever Apple do a keynote, it's like the most viewed thing at that point in time, because it's Apple. They have that reputation. And anything that does get shown during an Apple keynote generally gets like so much attention. It's crazy. But E3, in the space of like a year, if not two, has basically shown that actually people just don't care about E3 anymore. So if anything, what they should be doing right now is basically giving these slots away. Still charge a little bit, but they should be undercutting themselves, because they should be trying to win back the favor of the industry, but they don't seem to even consider that.
Yeah, I think as well, like a big thing that I think the people who run E3 don't realize is that use Sony. I know Sony don't do E3 anymore, but they're the ones I know off the top of my head that do this. They usually do their show at like 2-3 a.m. UK time. Let's say like some poor little indie studio, like let's say 3 or 4 of them have clubbed together $1 million to be next to Sony. Suddenly, like, they've done that, but what does that really gain them? Like, no one in the UK or Europe's going to see them there. Like, it's just the American audience, and they're paying $1 million to be next to Sony or whatever company comes on late at night, but half the world doesn't even see them there.
Yeah. It's, I think...
It's a really weird choice, isn't it?
100%. And, like, even, like, major publishers, like, you know, EA did their own in the last year, Ubisoft did their own, like, everyone's kind of realized, oh yeah, that thing that Nintendo were doing for years with Nintendo Direct just works and is kind of more cost efficient and more effective, except for maybe Ubisoft, because they managed to screw up a few times, but that's besides the point.
it's more, it, I think it generates better hype as well when they do their own. Like, I know that when Sony, like, oh hey, Wednesday, we're doing a thing, we're going to show some stuff off, come join us for half an hour. Like, everyone's like, oh, I wonder what Sony's going to show. Like, there could be this, could be that. Whereas, like, when it's E3, yeah, all right, but you still get excited because you're like, I wonder what they'll show if it's E3. But the reality is, like, E3 is always like, here's this big thing that will come out at some point in the next 2 to 3 years. Whereas when they do these, like, little ones, like Nintendo do with their directs, it's usually like, here's what's coming in the next few months. And you're like, this, I can get excited because I know that what's going to be in this is probably what's going to come out this year or within the next year, at least.
Yeah, I mean, there was one, Sony did one that was just before all the PS5 stuff, where they were just like, here are... In fact, I think it wasn't even like a showcase. They literally just did a series of tweets where they were like, right, tomorrow afternoon, every hour for 5 hours, we're going to reveal a new game. And it was like, and these games will be out in the next couple of weeks and you can play them. And like that, like you just look at the interaction on those five tweets of being like, this game's coming out like in 2 days and this one's out in a few weeks. Like, and that's with like limited space and shitty Twitter compression on the videos. That worked wonders as well. And that was just from a publisher saying, do you know what, we'll give you something to look forward to tomorrow. And it just worked. And people were like, cool, we know that tomorrow, five games, they're coming out this year. I can be excited. Whereas, yeah, as you said, with E3, you're just kind of like, I hope they do something. And then it's like vague cutscene of something that may or may not ever come out.
Well, I think that's the difference between them, though, is that like when you do those smaller little showcases of your own games, it's the hype for that company putting their own games out there is there. Whereas when like everyone does E3, it becomes like tribal, where people are like, oh, I hope Sony do the best E3. I hope they do better than Microsoft. And then you have Xbox on, oh, I hope Microsoft is better than Sony, blah, 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 blah. And it's not about like showing off the best games you've got coming this year. It's not about being like, well, Microsoft is bringing out Halo at some point. Well, we're doing Uncharted 19. What about that, Microsoft Day? And like, it doesn't matter when they come out. You're just publishing the bigger game there and then, and that's what matters.
Who won E3?
I don't.
Someone always does the who was the winner of E3. I think I've been guilty of doing this in the past as well. And yeah, you sort of look back at it and go, well, technically, did they win it? Because they announced all these games, but none of them are out for 5 years. And actually, somebody else announced only one game, but it's out next week.
Yeah. That was the way I always see E3, because you'd have everyone go like, was it Microsoft? Was it Sony? And I'd be sat there and like, well, like all of Nintendo's games they announced at E3 have come out. So, Nintendo. By that premise, we played their games, whereas Sony are like still years away from getting theirs out.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. Like, and then, like, we still had like who was the best of Summer Games Fest, but having it spread out, yes, there's still that thing of like, oh, who's going to get the first? Who's gonna you know reveal their announcements first? But like, it made things more manageable. It was like, okay, cool. So we've got Ubisoft on Thursday, and then Sony are doing Saturday, for example. Whereas when it's actually E3, it's like, all right, so I'm staying up for 3 days straight and I'm hoping something good happens. I don't know what fucking time of day it is. And do I even live here anymore?
That Summerfest was easier to digest as well. Like, yes. When you, I always find, I mean, I'm a culprit of this as well, but when I used to stay up and watch the Sony ones, for example, and they'd end with like when they did Ghost of Tsushima a few years back, and it looked amazing. And like, all they did was show a bit of gameplay. There was no like release date. It was still like 2 or 3 years away, whatever it was at that point. But like, you were there and you were like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's the best thing ever. And like, because of like the excitement and the lateness of the night, you were just like, you'd completely just overlook the fact that the game was not coming out for a long time. Like, it was just there as like fluff to make their show seem more exciting. Whereas like, when you get the Summer Game Fest thing that they did last year, you watch something, like maybe one or two things a day, and there's enough time to sit there and go, oh, that looks cool. I mean, I'm sure it's a couple of years away, but you think about it more logically than you do when you're watching E3.
Yeah. And the thing is, as well, is like, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Jeff Keighley, but I respect the work he does. Like, there was always, and I really appreciate this as well, like, there was always a pre-show and an after-show for anything within Summer Games Fest. And the great thing about that was that I watched one, and I can't remember which conference it was, but there were some pretty big announcements. But then afterwards, he spent that half an hour going back over the smaller announcements that people may have missed, being like, you know, don't forget about this title. And it was like, it was nice that like, and admittedly, that was probably just him just being excited for things that he was excited for. But it was nice that like, it didn't just end and everyone's focusing on that one end point. You know, he was then calling back like, did you see that thing? That was pretty sick. And even like the next day, there'd be Twitter polls like, which of these are you excited for? And it wasn't just like the big AAA titles, it was, you know, indies as well. So I think the Summer Games Fest did a really good job. Again, I don't have any data on it, so I could be talking out my ass, but from what I saw, I think it did a good job at making sure that it was a level playing field, or at least as much as it could be.
Smaller devs certainly got their money's worth.
Yeah, I think the thing as well with Jeff Keighley is, whether you like him or not, like, the dude loves video games, and like that reflects in what he puts out. Whereas E3 is clearly like, it's businessmen making business decisions, and it affects the quality of what we see as fans of the community. Whereas Keely is like, I love games. You guys love games. Let's play some fucking games.
You know who else loves games? Hackers.
Doesn't even make sense.
Because CD Projekt Red tweeted early hours of this morning that, well, last night, depending on where in the world you are, early hours of the morning for us, that they'd been subject to a cyber attack. I'll stay away from the irony of that. They released the hacker's ransom note as well.
Are you going to read it? Please read it.
Okay, in a moment. They said that an unidentified actor has gained unauthorized access to internal network and basically put ransomware on it so they couldn't access their data, but they had backups, so it's all okay. They confirmed it didn't contain any personal data of our players or users of our services. And they're going to work with all the relevant authorities to fully investigate the incident. The ransom note, which was read_me_unlock notepad, text document. Hello, CD Projekt. You have been epically pwned. We have dumped full copies of the source codes from your Perforce server for Cyberpunk 2077, Witcher 3, Gwent, and the unreleased version of Witcher 3. We've also dumped all your documents related to accounting, administration, legal, HR, investor relations, and more. Also, we have encrypted all of your servers, but we understand that you can most likely recover from backups. If we will not come to an agreement, then your source code will be sold or leaked online, and your documents will be sent to our contacts in game journalism. Your public image will go down the shitter even more, and people will see how you shitty your company functions. Investors will lose trust in your company, and the stock will dive even lower. You have 48 hours to contact us. Clearly, they've decided to not contact them and have taken this to Twitter, therefore confirming any documents that are leaked to gaming journalism. And I guarantee that there are hundreds of people looking on various dodgy sites and getting completely malwared up because something's labeled unreleased version of Witcher 3.
I think the real question is, Ace, are you in contact with these hackers to get us this like inside scoop on CD Projekt Red? Like, you're getting us the dirt?
Of course.
Thanks. Cool. Keep your eyes on the game grid, everyone. We're gonna leak some stuff about CD Projekt Red. I don't know what it could be.
All joking aside, like, the fuck? Like, just like, all joking aside, you know, I mean, I love the fact they use pwned in the note. That's funny. Their grammar is terrible, though. They should be working there. All joking aside, like, what the, like, what? Because ultimately, like, what's happened here is a lot, like, no customer information has supposedly been taken, but, like, personal information of developers has, HR documents, legal documents, like, what? Oh, no. A company didn't release a game that met your expectation. Admittedly, maybe they drove the expectation up, but like, your response is to do this. Like, what the absolute fuck? Like, it just... you could hack a government. You could, like, hack someone and reveal that they're, like, a paedophile or do something useful. But no, you hack a games company and threaten to leak their personal information and the fact that, ooh, look, a dev build of a game. The fuck is wrong with people? Like, am I the only one? Like, I'm sorry, but like, I can't process this because this is so stupid and such a stressful thing. Like, these people have already gone through hell, and now this. And it's like, honestly, at this point, I kind of hope every single dev at CD Projekt Red just says, "Nah, fuck this," and they all just like leave and get a better job. Like, because people don't deserve video games. I'm sorry.
I'm inclined to agree that. I mean, I don't know. There is a little bit of me that sort of feels, well, do you know what? They did promise things that they couldn't deliver, and that's, you know, that's pretty underhanded. But two wrongs don't make a right, and yeah, it is a ridiculously over the top reaction to a bad game. when you've got companies that you could be going after that are using child labor, that are abusing staff, that are doing all kinds of horrible shady practices, maybe CD Projekt Red aren't the worst company, and maybe they're not the people to be going after.
I don't understand what the end goal is. Like, I assume money, really, but...
Well, they obviously want a version of Cyberpunk where your dick doesn't glitch outside your trap.
But that's the best version of Cyberpunk. What are you talking about?
Playing the devil's advocate, this could just be trying to get sympathy.
Oh, you and your conspiracies. I see that Nikki didn't eat all of the tinfoil because you're still wearing some of it, eh?
Don't eat tinfoil much.
Because why would you not get the customer database as well as the accounts and legal and HR, etc.?
Those things are usually held in different places, though, from my understanding, the places I've worked at least.
Well, like, then why were they all on the same server as this unreleased version of The Witcher 3?
Look, CD Projekt Red aren't really well known for their most organized internal structure, are they? let's ask them. I don't know what the aim is here, or, in honesty, there's enough typos in it for me to think that CD Projekt Red could have written it, because I have played Cyberpunk and there's a lot of typos in that as well. But it's just people just,
there's a lot of typos in Cyberpunk.
Yes. When I first read the ransom note, I thought, "You have been epically pwned." I thought they'd misspelled "especially pwned," and I was just really confused.
It's just one of those things where, like, you kind of have to laugh about it, but when you actually start to, like, break it down and think about it, it is just a case of, like, what are you accomplishing? Like what you're literally. Like, obviously hacking, like, if this person gets caught, it's like, yes, that's an offense. But at this point, it's like, people are just harassing CD Projekt Red. I know we poked some fun, but at the same time, it's like, you know, these are actual people. Like, the problem lies with a few selected individuals, which, like, you know, the CEO, potentially, and the way they manage the company. But, like, this is hurting the actual devs, the people that, like, have worked on it. Like, this is hurting everyone at the company. And it's just, it baffles me that, like, probably some fucking, like, 4chaner is just like, haha, lol, I'm gonna fucking do this. It's like, you could just do so much more something productive with your time. You could do, you know, I just don't get it. And it's just like, what has this accomplished?
The actual hackers are doing that sort of thing. It's the script kiddies that have gone and, oh, I can get the Witcher 3 development build.
Hoopty derp, look at me, I'm amazing. I gotta fuck yourself.
I don't know why anyone would want that anyway. Like, The Witcher 3 is a pretty solid game. Like, you don't need to go find the shitty old
version. Yeah, that's the thing. And like I was reading some stuff about it, and people were like, it's either an early dev build that's full of bugs, or it's a build that they're maybe testing for, like, a next-gen upgrade, which is still going to be full of bugs. So what? Watch as people now get hold of this supposed leaked copy, play it, and then complain that, oh shit, it doesn't run properly. Yeah, it's because it's an unfinished build, you twats.
Yeah, if only there were some kind of version of The Witcher 3 available to be purchased right now on stores across all platforms. Oh wait, there is.
That's mad talk.
Well, Cyberpunk 2077 was one of the most highly anticipated titles for last year, so let's finish off. We're now a substantial part of the year in. Well,
2 months.
I mean, we now know more of what's coming out this year, so what's your most anticipated games for 2021?
Look, I'm going to get out of the way, but
if you say a Persona game, I'm going to scream.
We all want the tall lady from Resident Evil to step on us, and there's just no hiding from it anymore, is there?
I don't get the meme. There are no references to stepping on people in the demo or the trailer. Why do people keep saying it?
That just means the Capcom aren't hitting the market right, are they?
I'm an old man shouting at a cloud, aren't I?
I mean, she can extend, like, she extends her nails into, like, swords and stabs you through the face. Yeah. Like, I mean, all right, she's hot. The second I saw that, it's like, okay, that's...
Yeah, that's a little too extreme for my kinks. But speaking of vampires, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 is coming out this year, possibly?
I think it was delayed from last year to this year.
Yeah, it's delayed till this year.
Yeah, it's supposed to be late last year.
It's meant to go out soon, I thought. I thought it was like April time, wasn't it?
It's not got a date announced.
Ah, okay.
Unfortunately, but... okay, admittedly, I've not managed to make my way through Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines because I got scared of the ghost house. But
that's like right at the start as well.
It's not right at the start, it's like 2 hours in.
An hour, I would say, but go on.
I was going slow, it's 2 hours.
God damn. I'm really looking forward to Kena, Bridge of Spirits. It's the game that they haven't made. I don't think the studio made a game yet, but they did that like Zelda animated short that was on YouTube a few years back. And it just looks gorgeous. Like, it just looks cute. I might be able to convince my girlfriend to play it, which means I get the TV, and that's always a bonus. But yeah, that one's quite recent. I think that's coming out next month as well, so even more to be excited about.
I've got a couple I'm really excited for now, which is Evil Genius 2, which is finally coming out. I think March they have the date for now. I've been waiting for that for like 20 years. I absolutely loved the original Evil Genius. There's nothing else out there that's quite like it. And it's just so much fun. I just used to spend hours and hours just building the most elaborate traps to sort of bounce super spies around corridors and stuff. And also, Playtonic have just announced today that they've got an announcement on the 12th of February. So they've done that thing where they've announced that there's going to be an announcement, which is minorly irritating, but I'm really hoping that's going to be a new ukulele game.
Hasn't been that long since the last ukulele game, has it? 2019?
Was it 2019? Yeah.
2019 game. No.
It was game of the year, wasn't it? Because
2018 game of the year.
Yeah, 2018. Ukulele and the Impossible Lair. So it's 3 years this year since the last one came out, which is probably a reasonable development time for a platform game. So, yeah, they could well be working on another one.
DLC for the Impossible Lair.
I'd take that, to be honest. Anything new ukulele, I absolutely love ukulele. It's just like it just perfectly matches the spirit of Banjo-Kazooie.
It's your crack.
Yeah, totally. It's either that or have Microsoft sold them the rights to Banjo-Kazooie and they're going to remaster them. Because Microsoft have said they're not overly interested right now in using the IP, so you never know, they might have given it back to the original creators.
I don't see that. Something about Microsoft's way of doing things is not seeing that they would sell that. Although they could let it to them to put a game on their console, I suppose.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Greencast. Thank you for joining me, Rhodes, Dominoid, and Nikki. And thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to check out GameGrid.com, where you'll find all of our writing and the reviews that we've been discussing in this very episode. Keep an eye on social media, just search for GameGrid to find out whenever a new episode goes live, as well as the news, reviews, and articles. Finally, if you subscribe via Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, thank you. And if you can leave a review on your platform of choice, an even bigger thank you. And finally, game on.